Changes can seem slow in coming, especially after a long period with no change. Welcome everyone, I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Kenneth Wong is our host. He's an author, teacher, and itinerant speaker. Well, you know, I used to work for a company a long time ago that was simply stuck in a rut. It was one of those companies whose leader took pride in the fact that he had been doing the same thing for generations. However, I was a representative of a younger generation, and I had prayed for change. Now, it took several years, but one day, that old leader retired, and a new, younger leader took over. And boy, did things change. I mean, we could hardly keep up with the number and the speed of the changes. You know, something like that happened in the life of the Apostle Paul. And in just a moment, Kenneth reflects on that with a program titled Next Change.
Hi there, everyone. It's good to be with you. Next change is something that makes us anticipate the next movie or show or program or event that's coming up. While routine is good, some change adds some spice and excitement to life. And in a period when there is no change for a long time, or if we have been through a season when changes seem to be slow in coming, we would sometimes feel that any change is better than no change. But when changes come, they often come in a cluster. They come together one after another in one go. And if we are not prepared for them, we can find ourselves intimidated or overwhelmed by the sudden spate of changes that overtake us. It's like trying to pour ketchup from a bottle. At first, you shake and shake it and nothing comes out. But when it does, it pours, and you may find yourself with too much on your plate. Paul faced this at the end of 2 years of interminable waiting in detention in Caesarea by the Roman governors. We're going to study Acts chapter 25, where we shall trace four consecutive changes taking place in quick succession at Caesarea. They turned a new chapter in the life of Paul that finally brought him to Rome, that pinnacle of political power in the world empire of his day. In so doing, we might be able to identify ourselves with some of his thoughts and feelings, and also be helped by how he coped and decided, so that we too will be able to take change in our spiritual stride when we find it turning up at our doorstep in clusters. Let's begin reading with the last verse of the preceding chapter, Acts chapter 24, verse 27, to give us the background to the situation that we are going to study in Acts chapter 25. But after 2 years, Porcius Festus succeeded Felix, and Felix, wanting to do the Jews a favor, left Paul bound. So at the end of Acts chapter 24, we find Paul having endured 2 years of interminable uncertainty. He was detained by the Roman governor, who was Felix at that time, from the years 58 to 60 AD. Paul had been summoned to testify before Felix, at which he gave the first of his three high-level testimonies of his faith in Christ before the ruling authorities. There was further waiting, but with no definite outcome, under the governorship of Felix. And now at last, there was some change. The first change that we see was a change of command. The governorship or command was transferred from Felix to his successor, Porcius Festus, which brings us on to Acts chapter 25. And in verse 1, we read this. Now when Festus had come to the province, after 3 days, he went up from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Now at last there was some change. It's a breath of fresh air. Paul must have felt the same. Any change would be better than no change. There is now a new Roman procurator or governor of Judea in the person of Festus. There was a change of command and he took over as the new governor. And as is the usual practice, he first went on an inaugural tour for 10 days in Jerusalem. It was a familiarization tour as well as to establish rapport and to win over the people's support. It should be noted that Caesarea then was the provincial seat of administration and judicial power. It was not Jerusalem. Jerusalem was the religious center for the Jews. And so this first visit to Jerusalem was an important signal by the incoming new governor, Festus, to the Jews there that he wanted to start on a favorable note. He needed to build up his popularity and to win their favor. Verse 2, then the high priest and the chief men of the Jews informed him against Paul, and they petitioned him, asking a favor against him, that he would summon him to Jerusalem while they lay in ambush along the road to kill him. The Jews there were quick to seize this new opportunity, and they wasted no time in setting out their top agenda before the new governor. The elders and the chief men among the Jews, led by the high priest, immediately asked Festus for a favor and petitioned him to summon Paul back to Jerusalem for a trial. The Jews had tried to do that under the governorship of Felix, but failed. And they were still trying the same clandestine ploy to kill Paul on the way. They had not given up, and here was a golden opportunity to resurrect that plan. But once again, we see that God overruled. Man proposed, but God disposed. Reading on from verse 4, but Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself was going there shortly. Therefore, he said, let those who have authority among you go down with me and accuse this man, to see if there is any fault in him. Festus was an astute politician, and although he was new, he was not easily fooled. He did not play into their hands. What he did instead was to compel them to come to his home ground, which was Caesarea. Instead of agreeing to their petition and suggestion to summon Paul to go to Jerusalem, he needed to show these Jews from day one that he is the one who called the shots and pulls the strings, not they. Moreover, it is the height of political incorrectness and highly risky for a Roman procurator to give judgment in Jerusalem instead of the Roman provincial capital of Caesarea. So he deftly turned the petition around and summoned them to come down with him to Caesarea instead. Verse 6, and when he had remained among them more than 10 days, he went down to Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, he commanded Paul to be brought. Festus wanted to retain the initiative and to be seen in full control. And this can be done by having this difficult case, which he had inherited from his predecessor Felix, to be heard in his Roman civil court in Caesarea, rather than in the religious court of the Jews in Jerusalem. But he was also a crafty fellow, for in verse 9 we read, but Festus, wanting to do the Jews a favor, he could see some value in the Jews' wicked plot and plan to assassinate Paul on the way. It could be a politically expedient solution, a win-win solution to both sides, to a long-standing stalemate that has become increasingly an embarrassment to his administration. But it wouldn't look so nice if Paul was simply gotten rid of too soon. He might be seen to be succumbing to the Jews' demands. He wanted the Jews to hear the suggestion coming from him, while at the same time appearing to take into consideration their request and desire. And so without shutting the door completely, he was indirectly implying that he was willing to do them a favor, but on his terms. And so the counter-suggestion for them to return with him down to Caesarea, and so here they were. This leads us on now to the next change. From a change of command, we move on to a change of court when Paul was summoned before him in the Roman civil court of Caesarea, in the presence of his accusers, the Jews from Jerusalem. This presented Paul with yet another occasion and opportunity for testifying before the highest court in the land. This was the literal fulfillment of the words spoken prophetically of him at his conversion by the Lord. In Acts chapter 9, verse 15, "But the Lord said to him," that is to Ananias, who was commanded by the Lord to baptize Saul, but who had grave doubts about him, "Go, for he is a chosen vessel of mine to bear my name before Gentiles, kings, and the children of Israel." So here at last, Paul was beginning to see that happen. He had testified before the governor Felix, and now he was testifying before the new governor Festus. And he was later to testify before King Agrippa II in the very next chapter. But this second high-level trial or testimony was significant in that he not only testified for Christ, as he always did, but it also marked a major turning point and a change of course in the events that were to follow in Paul's life after an uneventful 2-year detention period. Now, in this second scene of Acts chapter 25, where we find the change moving from a change of command to a change of court, things began to move quite rapidly and unexpectedly. Reading on from verse 7, "When Paul had come, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood about and laid many complaints against Paul, which they could not prove." That was nothing new. They had all gone through this before, under the previous governor Felix. Verse 8, "While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar, have I offended in anything at all." Paul's defense was very clear and simple. He had done nothing wrong against the Jewish or the temple laws, nor had he done anything against Caesar's laws. He was insisting on his innocence. Festus was trying to seek a way to placate and to please the Jews. And while he was figuring out how best to do this, he had not reckoned on Paul's readiness to go all the way in defending his innocence. The scheming of Festus did not work, and it boomeranged on him. To Festus, Paul was just a victim. He was like a pawn to be used, if possible, to his own advantage. So we read in verse 9, "But Festus, wanting to do the Jews a favor, answered Paul and said, 'Are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and there be judged before me concerning these things?'" He was trying to meet the Jews halfway by suggesting to Paul to go up to Jerusalem this time, thus acceding to the Jews' requests, but with the condition that it was him who was to preside over the trial, not the Jewish council. But Festus never expected Paul to exercise his full right of appeal as a Roman citizen. So it caught him by complete surprise, quite unprepared, when Paul replied in verse 10. "So Paul said, 'I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews I have done no wrong, as you very well know. For if I am an offender or have committed anything deserving of death, I do not object to dying. But if there is nothing in these things of which these men accuse me, no one can deliver me to them. I appeal to Caesar.'" Paul seized the moment and the opportunity instead of allowing him to exploit the situation. He seized the initiative by throwing all their thinking and scheming into complete disarray. He appealed to Caesar, the highest court in the entire Roman Empire. It was a unique right which Paul had as a Roman citizen. No doubt, after 2 long years, they didn't think that Paul would be so daring as to make use of this right of appeal. It's just too radical. But it was a decisive statement and reaction on the part of Paul. In the midst of a very fluid and dynamic and tense situation, he stole the show, so to speak. He first began to reiterate his position simply and clearly that he had done no wrong to the Jews nor to the Romans, and adding very pointedly, as you very well know, appealing to the Roman sense of justice in Festus. So he was saying there were no grounds whatsoever for him to be tried either by the Jews or even by Festus himself in Jerusalem or in Caesarea. We're reminded very strongly of a similar situation to Jesus when he appeared before the Judean governor, Pontius Pilate, before he was sentenced to death by crucifixion. Pilate, similarly, was someone who was too weak in political will and was one who lacked the moral courage to make the right judgment for fear of losing the Jewish vote. And here we find the new governor, Festus, behaving in somewhat a similar fashion, although not so explicitly. Festus' question really set the stage for Paul to jump in and force a sudden change of course with his appeal to Caesar. For it was Festus who prompted Paul by his suggestion, "Are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and there be judged before me concerning these things?" To which he basically replied by implication that he was not fit to judge him, and therefore he appealed to Caesar. Although he didn't quite say it in so many words, but he implied that since Festus was vacillating in administrating Roman justice, all this talk and show was a sheer waste of time, and he might as well just go straight to the highest court of appeal in the empire instead of allowing this game between him and the Jews to drag on. He's going to put a stop to being kicked around as a political football between them. What a sudden and surprising turn of events that hinged on those two important verses. The question by Festus that prompted it in verse 9 and the answer of Paul in verse 10 that sealed it. Before that, it was all touch and go. After that, it's like end of trial, case dismissed. It is as Joseph said to his brothers who sold him into slavery, and when he had been reunited with them, and after the death of their father Jacob. "But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring about, as it is this day, to save many people alive." So likewise for Paul. Others had meant it for evil to kill him, but God overruled and overturned things and meant it for good, so that not only Paul's life was spared, but that he should be the means through which many others will be saved. That's because in reality, he stands before the highest court, not only of earth, but of heaven as well. The court of God and not man. Not even Caesar's. That's the ultimate supreme court, where all righteous judgment will be made and every wicked deed vindicated. It's a good thing to be on the Lord's side, as many of the past patriarchs of faith have shown. Listen to what David said in Psalm 124. "If it had not been the Lord who was on our side," let Israel now say, "if it had not been the Lord who was on our side, when men rose up against us, then they would have swallowed us alive when their wrath was kindled against us. Then the waters would have overwhelmed us. The stream would have gone over our soul. Then the swollen waters would have gone over our soul. Blessed be the Lord who has not given us as prey to their teeth. Our soul has escaped as a bird from the snare of the fowlers. The snare is broken and we have escaped. Our help is in the name of the Lord who made heaven and earth." That psalm begins with the reminder, if it had not been the Lord who was on our side, then we would have been swallowed up. And the rejoinder of Paul in the New Testament surely must be in Romans chapter 8, verse 31. "What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us?" Join us tomorrow to see what is the next change for Paul in Caesarea in Acts chapter 25. And may God refresh you through his presence and reach you through His Word.
In the fullness of time, God initiates changes that will cause His Word to be proclaimed far and wide. Thank you, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And join us again tomorrow when Kenneth presents part two of Next Change. Right now, though, we would love to hear from you, and I have several ways through which you can be in contact. You can send us a text message at 9431-3813, or you can write to us at Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road Post Office, Singapore 915-714. You can go to our Facebook page and leave your comments there or share some views with some of the other folks you see. Also, I invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, where you can listen to the program right online. And Times of Refreshing has launched an iPhone app that allows users to directly access the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from their iPhones. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.